Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
And that will do it. Predators' first game under coach John Hines doesn't go the way anybody had hoped for them. And the Bruins take this one by a 6-2 count.
Well, the message was to come back here tonight ready to play, ready to compete. You know, we weren't able to make any adjustments. And it's difficult. It's difficult sometimes coaching these games, too. I mean, I don't necessarily know the players as well. They don't really know me as well. But you know, I give the guys a lot of credit. I thought they handled the day very professionally. I think this was a game, although we don't like what the result was, I think it gave everybody a good feel of how things are going to be. And it certainly gave the coaching staff, you know, a clear vision of what we need to move on to tomorrow.
You go away for 2 days, man. You take 2 days off to go handle some personal business. And this is what happens. The whole city. What the hell happened in Nashville, boys? Good to see you, Derek. Marquise, my name's Braden Gall. This is Morning Drive. I went, you know, before we get into this, I will say thank you to you two for holding the fort down while I was gone. That you guys, obviously, fantastic. I do appreciate that. And then all the people of this great audience who sent me a bunch of well wishes and stuff as we were dealing with some stuff in the family. I do apologize about not being here with you guys the last 2 days, because apparently some things have happened in this town. I'm like with my family in Florida at a dual funeral, by the way, which is a unique experience. And I have very little access to the cell phone, because you're kind of in the moment. You're talking to people. You want to be spending time with your loved ones, and so I didn't find out about any of this stuff. So first of all, I didn't get any reaction to the Titans with you guys. I know. I heard a little bit of the show, and you guys did a great job with Robbie on Monday, and then special thanks again to Corey, of course, yesterday. And I'm like, I'm looking at my phone, and I'm just going, wait a second, what? Do what? The Preds are what? and sure enough, Peter Laviolette and the staff, and I'm going, holy smokes. And so then yesterday, I'm trying to follow it all along as, you know, we're going through. I'm on a plane to all across the, you know, I'm bouncing all across the country on these airplanes going like, I'm trying to follow the press conference. I'm trying to listen to David Poyle on my phone in the airport, and just a remarkable couple days in Nashville, but good to be back. And John Hines does debut last night as the new head coach of your Nashville Predators. I don't know about you guys. I don't care really what happened last night. Like, we can discuss, they were either going to be shot out of a cannon and play like, you know, the most perfect hockey game of all time, or it was going to be a complete, you know, mix of you know, I don't know how you organize a hockey team in half a day. like he literally showed up yesterday morning, was announced, and then had to coach that night against one of the best teams in the NHL. So I don't know about you guys, but the outcome itself last night at 6-2 and how they played, or, you know, hey, Derek. The power play is not very – they gave up a penalty kill goal. Like, I can't look at the game itself last night and do too much analyzing of what's taking place. I think the conversations still need to stay fairly big picture about John Hines taking over as the head coach of the Nashville Predators.
Yeah. I mean, he has the rest of the season to kind of, you know, work things out and sort of implement his culture and his style of play. He has the remainder of the season. He said it's going to take time. It's going to do it slowly because, you know, it's not like, you know, in the NFL where they fire a coach, you know, at the end of the season typically, and then you have the whole off season to meet with guys and let them know what you expect of them. When you fire a coach in the middle of the season, and then you know, it's not just you hiring a new guy, you hiring a guy from outside. And what he does is he just comes in and, you know, slowly, bit by bit, he starts to just drop seeds of what he wants and how he wants the guys to play. I'm disappointed in the team because I expected them to come out and play with their hair on fire. I really did. Yeah. And it was the same old, same old. They play good one period, they play bad the next. They play good one period, they play bad the next. The inconsistent, that's all I heard after the game. Inconsistency, inconsistency. Damn it, we'll get it fixed. I mean, people get tired. It's like crying wolf. Eventually, people are going to stop listening, and it's going to be something really wrong. Well, this team's been crying this same old inconsistency for the longest. You know, your inconsistencies got the last coach fired. Let's just basically call it how it is. Your inconsistency got the last coach fired because Peter Laviolette didn't just all of a sudden forget how to coach. Now, listen, his message probably wasn't resonating as much, but whose fault is that again? It's your fault, players. They're paying you a lot of money to go out there and perform a sport that you enjoy, that you love. And if you enjoy and love it, damn it, it shouldn't take a coach to motivate you to get you to play. That's just my outlook. Now others might be different.
No, I don't think it's that out of line there, man. I think, you know, you guys are getting paid millions of dollars to play the game. You should be self-motivated. Here, David Poole yesterday had a lot of things to say, of course, about the process and having to make the move, and then, of course, the announcement of John Hines as the head coach at the press conference. He did take questions by himself for a little while yesterday. And he, you know, listen, that was an emotional press conference for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. This was him, and you talked about the players taking some of the blame. I think everybody sort of deserves some of the blame, and here's David Poile explaining a little bit about that yesterday at the press conference.
I've met with the players this morning, and I've talked to a few guys. My message to the players was that I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for this change, and I take that responsibility. But you as players have to share in the responsibility of what's taking place today.
And he's not wrong. I mean, he also somewhere along the lines, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, he basically said, well, you can't change 20 players in the middle of the season, but you can change the coaching staff. So I think that's a part of this equation as well, and multiple different times. And I heard Sean Henry say this on Jared and the GM yesterday as well, that there are just guys on this team that need to step their game up, that need their bigger players, and they all know who they are, whether it's Forsberg, who did score last night, or Johansson, Duchesne, who was back on the ice last night after missing a couple of games over the weekend with the illness. You know, there's guys that got to carry their weight, man. It's the players too. So I don't think, you know, you're right about the inconsistencies. I just don't. The clock has been reset, you know, on this team. They obviously have a chance to make the playoffs this year, and so we'll analyze that. I just don't think last night is. I don't think anybody needs to be screaming about, oh, like the new system didn't work last night. You know what I mean? Like it's the new system isn't there yet. Mm-hmm. And I actually think, and I was thinking about this. When is the right time to make this move? And there really isn't a good time to make this move. But here's what I like about the timing. You've got six games here where he gets to sort of settle in, get to know the team, get to know the players a little bit, get to know their interactions, the intricacies of the locker room, and then they get a break with the All-Star game. So he gets this little six-game window, including last night, which, you know, obviously wasn't pretty with a 6-2 loss. But he gets this six-game window to sort of analyze things and gather information and data about not only their play on the ice, but who they are in the locker room, right? Mm-hmm. How do you motivate guys is a big part of being a coach. And then he gets a four-day break to sort of – I think that's when he has the chance to do the most work. So I actually kind of like the timing of this where you get a six-game window to sort of learn the team. Then you get a 4 or 5 day break for the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. Then you come back. I think that's when you start to say, all right, I want to see what John Hines' hockey team looks like. What is going to be different about your system? You know, are you going to be about, you know, high percentage offense in the offensive zone? Is it all about passing? Is it all about taking shots? You know, what is your offense look like defensively? You know, whatever. I think after the break is when you can start to see. I want to see what his stamp looks like. Right, he's putting his stamp on the team
now because this change was made. And everybody's saying, well, it can work, it can work. Look at what happened last year with the St. Louis Blues, right? They changed their coach, and all of a sudden it worked. Did they change their coach from within? They hired from within last year?
I believe so. That's the other weird part is he just happened to be available. That's exactly. The other part of this is that I'd hope they didn't go hire someone because he happened to be available. Because it's not like you're going to go take a coach from another team.
And while
they're head coaching, like you can't.
But here's the problem, and because people are, and again, if I'm wrong, you know, correct me, anyone, everyone, you know, I'm not beyond that. But to my knowledge, they hired from within. And it's easier to make a turnaround when you hire from within, I believe, because the system is set and the system is not going to be changed. And guys know the personality of the guy that's taking, you know, control of the team now because they've been around him. They understand him. The roles might change for him, but they understand, you know, what he's doing. It's kind of like Arthur Smith. They understand Arthur Smith. It wasn't like they brought somebody in from the outside. When they hired Mike Mularkey, you know, guys that they knew, or when they hired, Mike Munchak. They knew Mike. And a lot of things, you know, things around the building changed, but they knew his personality. So it wasn't just all of a sudden, you know, we're going to come in with a new coach and no one knows anything about him. This is the part that I'm worried about this season, not next season. This has nothing to do with next season. This is all about this season.
Right.
You bring in a new coach that no one knows anything about other than, okay, he was with the New Jersey Devils and it didn't work out there and he's coached some other places and, they say people love his, you know, at his previous places, they say his personality was great and he demands a lot. That's all they know. And they're not going to get to know him in this short of a span. It's going to be next year where you're going to see the true measure of who he is as a coach. Right now, this team is just piecing it together and they're going to continue to piece it together for the whole season. And last night, I think it's just an indicative of what's been going on and possibly what can continue to go on, you know, for the remainder of the season. I don't see nothing big changing until the offseason.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. 150, 159, and 45. So on paper, by definition, he was a losing head coach.
Yeah.
When he was hired. He was fired last month. Those are just factual things. That mm-hmm. that doesn't mean he's not a good coach. A very young guy, 44 years old. He's what I like about him. And from who I talked to yesterday, which I did not have a lot of time to do much digging on this because, again, I was on like six airplanes. Although the last one was like half empty. Oh, God, I love it when you get on that last flight and you've been on like six planes mm-hmm. in like 4 days or 3 days and like that last one's just half empty and you know you're not going to have anybody next to you in front of you. God, such a good feeling. So I haven't had a chance to do as much digging as I'd like for our audience, but the one word that continues to come up when I ask about him to people that know far more about this than I do, because mm-hmm. I don't think any of us know whether or not this guy's going to win a championship or
exactly.
not. Like we're all guessing at that. We're all going to learn. Even the guys that are lauded as the greatest hires of all time in any sport many times are failures and vice versa. Some guys that were nobodies, Dabo Sweeney, Coach O, whatever, turned into superstars and you just don't know. But the word development comes up a lot when you talk about John Hines. You know, he worked for USA Hockey for a long time. He was the head coach for a while, and that young players really respond to him and that he kind of lets the veterans do their thing a little bit more. And so he's more of a hands-on guy with the young talent, and there certainly is plenty of young talent on this team. There's plenty of veterans that don't need the coddling either. And those are the guys that David Poile, in my opinion, is talking to when he says, we need more. Mm-hmm. You know, when Sean Henry says, we need more, when everyone on this station says, we need more from guys like Ryan Johansson, you don't need to yell at Ryan Johansson he just needs to know mm-hmm. that he needs to do more. So development is an angle that I really like about this hire. And again, if it's meant to be a 2 or 3 year bridge thing versus a 15 year thing, who knows? Because again, you're hiring a coach in the middle of the season, which has worked four times in mm-hmm. the last 10 years. Four times in the last 10 years, an NHL team fired its coach in the middle of the year and won the freaking Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Craig Berube was the assistant for the Blues, and
won in the Stanley Cup. So yeah.
So Mike Sullivan did it.
So he was a part of the Stanley
Cup. Yeah, he was an assistant coach.
He came up through the AHL, and then he was their assistant coach last year. 2016, Mike Sullivan, the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup. What's interesting is that he also went on to win another cup. Mm-hmm. So there's proof there, right? It's not just a one-year crazy thing. Mm-hmm. He came back and won another cup. That was the year, of course, they beat the Preds. In 2012, the LA Kings... they bring in Daryl Sutter, and he wins the cup in 2012 as a coach that halfway through the season takes mm-hmm. over. But then he won another cup 2 years later. So, again, mm-hmm. it's proof that it wasn't just this one-year thing. And then, of course, Pittsburgh with Dan Bielsma won the Stanley Cup in 2009. So four times in the last 10 years, so an NHL team has fired his coach, and I think that is one of the most interesting things about hockey. Mm-hmm. Is there any NFL team that's ever fired its coach and won a Super Bowl in the same year?
Not that I know of. They probably got to the playoffs, maybe the AFC and NFC championship game, but I don't think they ever won a Super Bowl.
I remember on an NBA level. Because David Platt got fired, and then Tyronn Lue was end up winning the finals with.
Well, LeBron was the coach, though, right?
I mean, technically, yeah.
No, but again, in the NBA, that maybe that's true too. But like baseball, like I think there's been some baseball teams that maybe fired their coach and made the playoffs. Like again, it's just a very unusual thing that it works in hockey. So listen, we haven't had time really to like for me at least. I still have one. There's one thing that stands out to me the most when I got the news about Peter Laviolette being fired. There's one thing that stands out to me a lot, and I'll explain, and I want to get you guys' reaction. I know you guys had a lot of time yesterday to react to that. I just want to get my one take out about Lavi being fired, and we'll get to that when we come back. And then we got some Titan stuff coming up. We got a lot to do today on a Wednesday edition Back in the Saddle. Great to see you guys, and great to be back. So we'll be right. This is my one. What does it mean that the Predators fired Peter Laviolette? Is sort of where I'm going to go with this. We'll do that when we come back right here on Morning Drive. Obviously, a huge football weekend in the city of Nashville as the Titans take on the Ravens on Saturday. We will, of course, get to that coming up in just a few minutes. Teron Davenport going to join us as well. So we got a lot of stuff to do. Final hour, by the way, Elko going to join us. Love me some Elko. Linda Cohn going to be on the show with us. Adam Bingen as well. Sean Henry. So we got a lot of stuff to do as, of course, the Preds debut their new head coach, John Hines, last night. And here's my one thought, and I wanted to get y'all's take on this because, again, I didn't have a chance to be with you guys here yesterday. And I know you and Corey, Derek, had a lot of things to say about the move. But I just to me, I'll tell one quick anecdote, just one quick story about – so this is a really close friend of mine who used to be a Predators employee. And this is going back. He worked for the Preds a long time ago, and not in like any sort of scouting department. He was just sort of in the operations side, right? Mm-hmm. He's a friend of mine. He played hockey growing up. He's a really smart guy. But neither one of us were affiliated with the Preds in any way, shape, or form when Peter Laviolette was hired. I had never covered the team. I was a season ticket holder. I was just a fan at that point, mm-hmm. right? And we were just. I remember having a beer with this guy when they announced that Peter Laviolette was hired, and I said, well, I'm kind of excited about the hire. You know, the guy, he's been to a cup twice. Like, he knows what he's doing. And this guy's first, and again, this is just an anecdote. It doesn't mean anything. This guy's first thing to me out of his mouth, a guy who played the game and worked for the organization in the past, not at mm-hmm. the time. And to me, he looks at me and goes, yeah, he's got a great message. Players want to run through a wall for him, and then it gets stale pretty quickly. And that was the line about Peter Laviolette the day he was hired. By somebody who knows the game to me at that time. And we both were like, okay, whatever. Who knows what it means? And then we spent year after year after year with Peter Laviolette, and he appeared to have changed and softened a little bit and become mm-hmm. a little bit more player-friendly, and the message seemed to have worked. His point totals were, he had three seasons over 100 points. He won almost 62% of his games, which is better than he ever did in Carolina or Philly. But clearly, like you said, the message got stale. And it was time to make a change. Here's my two takeaways from making the move. Number one, we can all sit here and say it was the right thing to do to fire Peter Laviolette, and at the same time also say thank you to Peter Laviolette for all the things that he did.
Of course.
I think two things can exist. I hate that when, you know, somebody leaves a company or, heaven forbid, somebody passes away, and we all have to feel like we have to only say positive things, right? Like, mm-hmm. well, no. Like, there was – people are human. Lavi did such great things for this city and accomplished so many great things for this organization that you have to appreciate it, and you have to stand up and applaud and say thank you for what you've accomplished here. I can also at the same time say this is big boy stuff. If you want to act like the Torontos of the NHL, if you want to act like those big franchises in the NHL, you know what I mean? The way the Patriots and the Giants and the Steelers and the Packers act in the mm-hmm. NFL. If you want to be big, act big. Making a move like this is a big move. It's a show of our expectations are to win a Stanley Cup, and underachieving will not be tolerated. And to me, that is a message to the fans and a message to the players saying we're no longer an organization that's just okay with being the seventh seed that's just going to get into the playoffs three out of every 4 years and maybe lose in the first or second round. What this move told me was We ain't messing around anymore. Expectations are, we are going to demand excellence. And I think that is something that Preds fans can at least be excited about.
Well, they should be. And, you know, anytime a move is made like this in any sport or any business, what you're saying is, unless someone, you know, retires on their own, what you're saying is, what has been happening recently isn't acceptable. And we don't think it's going to change. So we got to move in. So we have to move in another direction. And it starts with the head coach. And then after that, it kind of trickles down if nothing continues to change. So it's going to continue to happen. And Poyo was, you know, he got to a point where I think he felt he had to, you know, try to save the season, and to go into next season already having a coach in place,
yeah,
and then being able to, you know, have that coach implement his style and his personality into the team more during the off season. So these decisions aren't made lightly.
No.
These are decisions that I think, and I said yesterday, I think Poyo had been thinking about this since the beginning of the season, but he wanted lobbied an opportunity to change it, because
right. This
thing has been going downhill for the Predators since they went to the Stanley Cup. And when I mean downhill, I mean once they get into the playoffs. You can do whatever during the regular season, but the true measure of your team and how people perceive your team is once you get in the playoffs, what do you do? You can be, we've seen the best teams in hockey, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years. They win a President's Cup, and then they get in the playoffs, and they lose in the first or second round. Well,
certainly happened last
exactly.
year.
Exactly. All of that, I understand that it wasn't truly for nothing, but yes, it was, because the ultimate goal is to, however right. you get in the playoffs, right. to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I was thinking about, for some reason, I was thinking about Malcolm Turner, the Vanderbilt athletic director, and the move to fire Bryce Drew,
mm-hmm.
and how we all viewed that, right? We reacted to that firing like, oh, wait a second, Vanderbilt's going to do what? They're going to pay a huge buyout to fire a coach after only a couple of years? Like, it felt like it was big boy stuff, right? I looked at it and I said, this is not something Vanderbilt has ever really done before,
mm-hmm.
which is pay a huge buyout to fire a coach pretty early on in his tenure because they didn't think it was working out. That's new territory for Vanderbilt. But you know what? It sent me a signal that Malcolm Turner was this new, he's the new guy in charge, and that he is going to demand a higher level of excellence. Now, we could argue that should that have included the football coach this year?
Mm-hmm.
We could have that discussion. Maybe he should have fired Derek Mason. I don't know. I would always keep anybody employed named Derek Mason, so it's fine with me. But I just, that Bryce Drew move felt like a new look Vanderbilt, where they're going to turn the page and they're going to be about demanding excellence. We will not tolerate something. This is a big boy move, something we haven't done in the past. And this is new territory for the Nashville Predators. And it strikes me again as when you see these historic, epic franchises in the NHL that struggle, Toronto firing its coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh demands excellence. They fired a guy who won a cup in the middle of the season a couple years ago. And so when you see these guys, these organizations that are the premier organizations in the sport, and they don't handle this, that when you are seventh place in the division and your talent says you should be first or second, guys get fired. But that's big boy stuff. That's the highest level of the sport. Not these franchises around the bottom that kind of just are, they make the playoffs and they're pretty good and they're fun and, you know, the atmosphere is cool and the fans are great and, you know, the marketing department's great and all that stuff. Like, no, this is about wins and losses and points. And so to me, it struck me as something not new about the Predators, but that this is now a big boy organization. This is a where we are not going to tolerate being in sixth place when this team should be in first or second place.
Well,
that's just we are done with that. This is, we demand excellence, and you're going to win at a high level or you're not going to coach here.
You're absolutely right. The evidence is Poyo, this is only the second coach. Well, it will be the third coach that he has hired since he's been the GM with the Nashville Predators. And the Nashville Predators have been in existence for over 20 years. Three coaches in 20 years. That's stability. Not many teams can say that in sports, period. That is true stability. So when he makes the decision to change coaches, he's thought about it for a long time, and he felt it was necessary in order for this team to move forward. Now, we haven't seen him do it during the season, but he's done it nonetheless. And you just hope that he gets it right, because obviously he got it halfway right, because you knew what the you knew what the stigma was about Lobby when he came in, but you still chose to hire him because Lobby's track record is impeccable as far as winning. He's been to a Stanley Cup. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's taken two teams to a Stanley Cup.
And then
Cup.
His team gets bad after that.
Exactly. So you knew the track record, but you were willing to still hire him because you felt that at least we will get an opportunity to play for the Stanley Cup. Well, that's what he did.
Well, he did.
Put you in an opportunity. He put you in a position to win the Stanley Cup.
He was a high-profile hire that had high, you know, issues that we all knew about.
Exactly.
Sort of like a, you know, like the story, the book on him was sort of already written, but we also knew he'd been to two cups.
And exactly.
So high-profile hire, and I think it worked longer and better in Nashville than anyone anticipated. And it again, there you have to also. Just because I'm a very conservative guy when it comes to firing coaches. I just think letting coaches work their way out of problems, I think, is almost always smarter. But, again, that's just my personal. I know some fan bases aren't like that. They just think fire everybody right away. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory, but which is why, you know. Now, once you've been someplace 6 or 7 years, you kind of are what you are at that point. So, listen, again, 3 100-point seasons, a President's Trophy, two division championships, a trip to the Stanley Cup. Like, you cannot argue that the accomplishments here are not, should not, they should absolutely be celebrated. He is a, when you look back on Predators hockey and you look at when they went to the next level, Peter Laviolette deserves the credit for that, or some of the credit, like all the other people in the organization do. Mm-hmm. But you know who really gets the credit for this type of move happening? You, the fans. Mm-hmm. Because you, the fans, have now elevated your expectations and demand excellence. And now that you do that, this is what kind of stuff happens. You get coaches fired in the middle of the season, and it's just what happens. So we'll see what John Hines can do. And again, I like the timing of it because I think you get this 6-game window to evaluate your team, and then you get a break to sort of implement your system a little bit during the All-Star game, and then it's like, all right, let's see what you got for us in the second half. So there you go with the 6-2 loss last night to Boston. All the same problems, but I don't think there's too much to be evaluated in one game. The guy showed up yesterday, literally, like, flew into town and was like, hey, I'm here. I'll coach the team for you tonight. So I don't think we can really learn a whole lot from one particular game. There is a football game on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got a football game on Saturday?
Yeah, big one.
What side of the fence are you on? Have you been asked that question this week?
No, not really. I think Corey, he didn't ask me. He just asked me the outcome, what I thought the outcome
you,
would be.
But it was like, hey, man, we got like 3 shows
left.
We can't be giving away our
okay, so
ingredients
I gotta,
yet.
I want to know what – eventually on Friday we'll find out which team he's rooting for, which is a very different thing. We'll find that. I'm going to put you on the spot on that one because I know those are your two favorite organizations. So we'll get to that. I have not had a chance to react to the win and the matchup against the Ravens, so we'll get started with that. We got Teron coming up next hour as well. Earl Thomas had something to say about Ryan Tannehill, so we got that for you. We got a lot of stuff planned as we transition to the NFL playoffs when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Join Jared and the GM this Friday from 2 to 6 p.m. at Wyatt Johnson Ford at 646 Thompson Lane in Nashville. Also, Chase McCabe is headed to Baltimore this weekend. What? Seriously, who approved that? Who sent Chase McCabe to Baltimore? Who did that?
Hey, the station. Management.
Watch out, Baltimore. Here comes Chase McCabe.
Here comes the constable.
The constable's coming to town, baby.
He's got his badge on, twirling a stick.
I don't want to hear anything about Chase McCabe twirling a stick. This weekend for divisional round coverage, he'll be up in Baltimore, which is all brought to you by Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. I believe I saw him and talking with TD on Saturday. They got a show coming up live from Baltimore, so that's pretty cool stuff there, of course. And then it should be a ton of fun on Saturday as the Titans and the Ravens, two organizations, of course. And again, I know you guys have talked about this a lot, but I have not really had a chance. There's a lot of history there. I'll say this. My experience Saturday night, and again, I know we're on Wednesday and we're already on to Baltimore and we're moving forward, and I think the matchup – I this is going to sound crazy, Derek. Mm-hmm. I think the defensive personnel in the front seven for the Tennessee Titans is uniquely qualified to match up with this Greg Roman offense. But I it sounds crazy to just even just say that. So I'll explain a little bit further on. But Saturday night, my experience, my first reaction to this game on Saturday night over the Patriots is I don't really care what happens moving forward. Like, forget about what could take place on Saturday against Baltimore. You know, who knows what Mike Vrabel's tenure is going to look like at the end of his career, 10 mm-hmm. or 10, you know, 5 years or 10 years or 15 years from now or whatever. That could be one of the most historic playoff games that you will ever have as a Tennessee Titans fan, ever, because of what it did to Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, in fact, Tom Brady's final game in a Patriots uniform, which I'll believe it when I see it, but if it is, in fact, his final game in a Patriots uniform, that was history.
Yeah.
You were a part of history as an organization. You went up there, and Dean Pease and that defense, Derrick Henry running the football, you shut Tom Brady down and embarrassed him in his own building in the second half of that game. And it might be the final time we ever see him, the greatest quarterback of all time, in a Patriots uniform. And you guys are the reason that it turned out that way. I just think Titans fans and Titans players, obviously, I just think you should take a lot of pride in how historic that moment was, and that you will always remember where you were the night the Titans beat the Patriots in Foxborough.
Yeah, I hope so. But they can't look at this and just say and we beat the Patriots, because it's bigger than a New England Patriots. This it's great for the organization that they, you know, has at least this season slayed the giant. But if they want to continue to go further, it's bigger than a New England Patriots. And I think everybody needs to recognize that, because you beat New England and then come back and get ran through the mud against Baltimore. The players, they're not going to see any gratification in beating New England. They're just going to look at it as, yeah, we did what we did 2 years ago. We beat Kansas City and then lose to New England. Well, this year's we beat New England and we lose to Baltimore. So in order to continue to make this special, they got to go to Baltimore and they got to beat a very good Baltimore team. And that will compound, the celebration and the sense of accomplishment that they had when they beat New England.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think the goal is to win a Super Bowl, period, period. That's it. There's no other goal but to win a Super Bowl. And if you want to elevate your franchise to the point where you're competing for Super Bowls, you got to go beat teams like Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then guess what? You might have to go to Kansas City after that, mm-hmm. or then you might have to play the Niners or the Packers or whatever. Like, you're going to have to, like, winning a Super Bowl is really hard, and you got to do a lot of amazing things along the way, and you got to beat good teams every round. I just think that regardless of what happens in the mm-hmm. future, if you are a Titans fan, the fact that the guy who won three Super Bowls as a player for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady's good buddy, with a coordinator who called a brilliant second half of a game, who used to coach for Bill Belichick, with a player who used to play for the Patriots intercepting a pass for a pick six. I had a chance to talk with Logan Ryan on Saturday night, and he's just like, it means the world to me. I learned how to get up and train from Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the first one. Remember, we're out at camp all the time in the preseason, and he is the first dude on the practice field
mm-hmm.
at 6 a.m. We're starting our show at 6 a.m., and he's out there doing calisthenics and warming up. And there's no other Titan player even around.
Mm-hmm.
And Logan Ryan's the first one out there because he learned how to do it from Tom Brady and those guys in New England. And I think no matter what happens moving forward, fans can always like say, you know what, that was a historic accomplishment. Now, it means nothing moving forward for this mm-hmm. weekend. You got to go win. And I think the Ravens are an incredibly difficult matchup. They obviously are a great team. There's also some ties in history with this organization. Mm-hmm. You know all about it. You played for both of them. So I don't know if we're in for a historic run here from the Titans. I've heard your analysis on this before, which is, Ryan Tannehill's going to have to throw for more than 72 yards and 15
yeah.
times if you want to win. I agree with that. But this was a historic evening. And again, just, you know, I was doing ESPN radio that night, and the amount of this is the end of the Patriots dynasty, maybe, that Tom Brady may never play again. Like, to be the reason that that happened, I don't know. I still think that's an amazing story, regardless of what happens moving forward.
Yeah.
To be the guys, you're right. To be the guys that maybe ended it all,
mm-hmm.
with all the ties that they have, New England South, John Robinson, like all this stuff. I don't know. It felt historic. And I think they're going to remember that night forever. You'll remember it a lot more if you go beat Baltimore. But you get my point, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just separate it from what's going to happen in the future and just say, man, what a historic evening. A historic night. Derrick Henry's birthday, 182 yards, like the whole deal. Again, I know it happened on Saturday and it's a Wednesday. I just haven't had a chance to talk about it. So now I got that off my chest.
Yeah,
thank you for giving me that chance.
This team, other than, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and I think Cleveland, they play Baltimore the most. And the season series right now, I think it's 12-11 Baltimore. They have a one-game lead on the Tennessee Titans. And I've played in all but four of those games. Matter of fact, all but four of them.
Did you play in every playoff game between the Ravens and Titans?
Every playoff game.
Because you were in the Ravens in 08, right?
Uh-huh. So... the last time I faced the last time I was in one of them was 2009 playoff. It was the 2008 season, but 2009 when we came here and
I was at that
the
game.
Titans were the number one seed, and we beat them. So from 96 to 2009, I played in all of them. It's only
on both sides.
Yeah, on both. You see the one
crazy.
Side or the
yeah,
other.
That's crazy.
And obviously 11, 14, 17, and 18. I had retired by then, but...
Are you suggesting that you might not have been able to help Marcus Mariota get sacked 11 times?
Nah, exactly.
Do you remember that crap?
It was awful.
The last time they played, it was not pretty.
Yeah, so this is... These franchises know one another, and, it's going to be... We look at this game and we're going to, jump in it even more as the show go on. But I don't think this is going to be a game like it has been in this rivalry, because it is a true rivalry. 12-11, Baltimore leads the series 12, they got 12 wins and right. 11 losses. This is a true rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
It's back and forth.
Oh,
back
and forth. Eddie versus Ray, man.
Yeah,
that's
it's
how
back and forth.
Yeah.
But I don't think this year is going to be like previous years, because if you look at previous years, the games have always really been close, other than, 0-1 when they beat us 26-7, and I think they end up winning 36-10. They had 36 points somewhere around there.
I mean, the last meeting, Joe Flacco was the quarterback. John Brown and Crabtree were playing receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Ingram wasn't on the team. Ryan Tannehill wasn't on the Titans. Marcus was sacked 11 times, but like none of the team, barely any of the team is the same.
No, it's not.
The offensive coordinators are different for both teams. It's just such a new thing. Both sides are new, and this is a brand new situation. And the Titans are clearly the underdog. They absolutely should be the underdog. Baltimore's been the best team largely in the NFL for basically the entire second half of the season. You've been saying that for how many months and weeks now? The question is it a good thing that the Tennessee Titans are the underdog? Because they traditionally play pretty well. So we'll get into that underdog status when it comes to the Titans and Ravens when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
I would imagine we're the underdogs every week. That's kind of, you go to our games. There's 20,000 other teams' fans. I just coach the team, try to get them ready. Some days it's good enough, and some days it's not good enough. I try to improve on what I didn't do well enough. All I can tell you is that we're excited to prepare and then ultimately play at the end of this week.
We always talk about a mindset, dominant mindset, understand we can compete with anybody. We already know everybody going to count the Titans out. That's this season, next season, wherever season is going to be, nobody count on the Titans, but this is the season for us to put more on.
You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, months in producing, and that's Jarrell Casey, Mike Vrabel, talking about the situation this weekend. And listen, the Ravens are the stars, right? Mm-hmm. They are the shooting star that everyone's been obsessed with. Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, in this new offense, which, by the way, I'm not going to lie, I had a blast watching all season long too, because when you line up in an inverted wing T and run trap option with your guards, I just love that crap. I think it's just fun to watch. And few defensive coordinators, you know, in the NFL or defensive players have ever seen a system like that. And so it's so much fun to watch. And the Ravens have been the darlings. And again, I'm not trying to like, I mean, maybe it's a humble brag. Is it a humble brag when I say when I was doing ESPN radio on Saturday night? The story.
You really were doing it.
Right, I'm not lying. The story wasn't really about the Titans. I had to keep forcing people to say, like, no, congratulations to the Tennessee Titans. The story is about the Patriots. And so nationally, whether Titans fans want to acknowledge it or not, and we talk about it on this show all the time, the Titans aren't the brand. They aren't a brand that people nationally are going to pay attention to until you start doing stuff that's great, like they're doing right now. Like, if you can go on the road and beat Baltimore, people are going to start paying more attention. You've got a marketable star at wide receiver in A.J. Brown. You've got a marketable star at running back who is the star of the franchise in Derrick Henry. You've got a quarterback that's slinging it all over the place now. You're going to be the underdog no matter what. And so Baltimore, they're going to get all the press coverage. They're going to get all the clippings. And the difference between this matchup with Baltimore and the matchup with New England is that no one's giving you a chance in this game. I think a lot of people gave the Titans a really good chance to play well in that game. Nationally. Even, I think the smart football people were like, you know what? New England's not playing well. The receiving core's not that great. You know what I mean? All the things we said last week. That ain't the case this week. Everybody and their mother's like, how the hell do you stop Baltimore? They're impossible. You can't stop them. How do you stop them?
No, you're absolutely right. But this is a different team than the New England Patriots. You walked in to Gillette Stadium knowing you were the better team. And the only reason, and I mean the only reason people were giving New England the benefit of the doubt is because of Brady, Belichick, and their history. But any smart football guy or girl knew that the Titans were the better team. You know, this was
playing better football for sure.
This was probably the worst 12-4 New England team they've had. You know, 12-4, but it was their worst 12-4 team. God. And the record was indicative of their conference.
Yeah.
Their conference was down. They beat everybody in their conference. And they beat the teams, a few of the teams that they needed to beat, but they lost to, you know, the playoff teams. You know, they lost to Kansas City. They lost to Baltimore. They lost to Miami, who is in the playoff team, but I think they lost to Houston
Texans. Well, they lost to Miami when they needed to win to get a bye and couldn't get the job
done. And they lost to the Houston Texans. Yeah. So three of their four losses were to teams that are in the playoffs and right now.
Trending in a very different direction than Baltimore,
so
no question.
When you went up to Gillette, you were playing a different team, a team that, frankly, they were not better than you toward the end of the season. And if you would have lost that game, then shame on you. You did exactly what you're supposed to do, and that was run the football because they couldn't stop you. And you overpowered them. You exerted your offensive or physical prowess over the New England Patriots
from the first drive.
Yeah, exactly, from the first drive. But this is a different animal. This is an animal that is playing as good, even better than you are at this particular time. And you got to figure out a way to stop this team because they are a carbon copy of who you are plus five. Remember this. They are a carbon copy of what you are. They run the football and they play really good defense, but they do it times five. So you got to figure out how to stop it. And they're healthy for the most part. You are banged up on defense. And I believe in Dean Pease. I believe he will try to put something together. But when you're trying to put something together against a team that passed the ball a lot, it's easier to do. It's harder to do to put something together when a team has rushed for more than just about everybody but maybe four or five teams in the National Football League. No, they rushed for any more yards than anybody. They have 1,000 more yards than the second-place team in the NFL. Yeah,
it's not even close.
It's not even close.
What it is, it's when you say it's one of the better rushing teams historically.
It is the best rushing team
historically.
Ever.
ever. And it's, again, partly because they're using concepts that have not been seen in the NFL either for decades or never.
Yeah.
And so if you play Army and Navy and you know, in college, and you see Georgia Tech under Paul Johnson or whatever, and you're like, oh, man, I've seen those principles, those blocking schemes, and I hate the line where you go, oh, how do you beat a triple out? Oh, you got to play disciplined football, control your gaps. But like, it really does come down to, you know, like if it's Kamale Correa who's on, and I've got a couple. Obviously, we'll get into the matchup with Greg Roman and Dean Pease, and that's going to be a fantastic X's and O's matchup. I just think this franchise relishes the role currently of being the underdog. You don't always want to be in that situation. You need to grow out of that eventually and become a dominant franchise and be a team that is getting first round buys routinely. That's the goal, is to win Super Bowls and to build your program into that level of success. They're not obviously there yet, but they're trending in the right direction under Mike Vrabel and John Robinson. So I've got some really critical players and some thoughts on how they can stop that rushing attack, because you're right, it is historically, epically good. Also, listen, Baltimore's great on defense, but they're going to have some challenges. They've got to stop the NFL's leading rusher in Derrick Henry. And you'll hear from Earl Thomas coming up next hour about his thoughts on the play-action pass that the Titans are implementing right now. Some comments from him on Derrick Henry as well, so we'll get to that. Teron Davenport next hour. However, a new head coach was announced yesterday and made his debut. We'll get back into the Preds. John Hines making his debut behind the bench for the Nashville Predators when we come back right here. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.